Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Hey, everyone. It's Dave Asprey with Bulletproof Radio. Today's cool fact of the day is that in one study, rats that lack the ability to taste actually began to prefer concentrated flavors in their water over just plain water. But if they can't taste, why would they do that? And the scientists actually believe it's because food causes post-ingestive cues in rat brains, and probably human brains, which leads the rats to prefer ingesting nutrients that we need, things like amino acids. That might be why eating flavored replacement foods never quite cuts out your cravings. Even if it tastes the same, your body knows that you're trying to lie to it.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy, specifically more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Today's guest on the show is a really, really cool guy, and he's a New York Times bestselling co-author of The Paleo Kitchen, and he's the creative crazy man behind Civilized Caveman Cooking Creations, none other than George Bryant. He's also lost 100 pounds with your brother, me too,
yes.
A former Marine, and his father passed away from brain cancer in 2008. So definitely some health interest there, some cooking interest there, and we're going to talk about a lot of cool stuff and probably a few things that where we don't agree, but hey, we'll figure that out. George, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. I love the agreement clause. That's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, if we only agreed on everything, it wouldn't be any good. So
yeah, it would be a boring world.
Could you just tell me why paleo is bad for you?
Totally. Because people get narcissistic about it, egotistical, and maniacally dogmatic.
Nice. So much like, actually, doesn't have that in common with like the vegan diet, the low-fat diet.
Pretty much everything. We jumped on the coattails and now we're separating ourselves again.
That's too funny. Any nutritional program can get like that. And you're maybe someone who understands that better than most because you've also kind of, we'll say, outed yourself as a bulimic,
yes.
At least a former bulimic. And by the way, that takes huge amounts of courage to talk about that, especially as a man. So good for you.
Yeah. You know, I realized when I went paleo and I started feeling better and everything was regulated and I was still like having that dirty little secret, I realized like that belief that I had about myself was preventing extraordinary results everywhere in my life because I was never really vulnerable or authentic or transparent. And I honestly felt kind of hypocritical posting recipes online and telling people to be healthy while secretly I had this like skeleton in my closet. So I feel like I lost an extra 100 pounds the day I posted that online. It was the best thing ever.
It's interesting that bulimia gets into both psychology and biology, right? It's actually, what do you think? Is it one or is it the other or is it both? Like, how do you separate those out in your view of the world and health?
Yeah, it's totally, to me, it's from the psychological standpoint as well as the biological, I feel like there's a different ratio for different people depending on almost like your paradigm and your belief system that was formed as a child or growing up and your external influences like socioeconomics and family and religion and school. But once one takes over and gets past the tipping point, then they both kind of feed into each other. And even if you're in a great mindset, you're in a great place of wanting to overcome it, you've literally created this vacuum of your body for hormone dysregulation and cravings and all these things that you talk about biohacking-wise and with everything from your blood sugar to your brain to patterns that you've created around your life. So they feed into each other. So for me personally, because I can only talk about myself, in order for me to overcome it, I got to be really grounded in my belief system about myself and having a healthy relationship with myself. And once I was stable and solid there, the rest of it biologically, when I could stick to my guns and nourish my body, kind of fell into place and supported my journey.
Basically, from that perspective, and I'm just kind of playing this back, you had some emotional stuff, and certainly I've dealt with my own bunch of stuff there, and I'm pretty public about that. So you had some emotional stuff, then that led to biological problems, which then compounded the emotional problems.
Yes. All right. Yes, that's the best way to put it.
Okay, so after that happened, and then you went paleo, losing 100 pounds, it changes your whole outlook on everything.
Totally.
I don't think a lot of people who haven't lost at least like 40 or 50 pounds kind of understand like the impact of having to buy pants that are like, you know, two-thirds as big as your other ones.
Totally.
But so there's that emotional like satisfaction that comes from knowing you've achieved this. Do you feel like now though that you still get cravings like that are biologically based, like because you ate something wrong or because you didn't sleep or because something like that? Or is most of it like a psychological thing now and you've managed to balance that out?
Yeah, I feel like now at my point it's a lot of it's psychological. What I realized though is in the beginning of my recovery, my journey, because I haven't had an episode, I'll never be bulimic again, but I haven't purged in 2 years. What I found in the beginning is that I was associating the cravings with a biological thing rather than really diving in and taking a look at the beliefs I had around it, which, you know, I was playing an awesome game and story with myself, convincing myself that the story was real and I was a victim to my circumstance. So now, when those things come up, I can take a really hard look at how I've been sleeping, how I've been eating or not eating or treating my body, and realize that I'm literally creating that symptom in my body and I have the tools to overcome it. So all of it for me now is psychological and relating to the circumstance in an empowering manner rather than a victim to it, I can't help it, I gotta give in to it. But it's feedback for me. It's literally the map for me to have the healthiest body possible.
So in some of the social media stuff I've done recently, I posted something along the lines of, if you have a food craving, it's your fault.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the truth.
Okay, how do you deconstruct that? Like, as a guy who's clearly healthy, clearly understands nutrition, and understands some eating psychology at a level more than most people, because you not only had an eating disorder, but you've hacked it. So,
yeah.
Okay, how do you respond to that? Like, does that piss you off, or you agreed with it? Help people who are listening understand.
I want to say thank you. Like, I want to say thank you for saying what people don't say. You know, there's a lot of levels that I could go on that, and like we could dive into personal development all day, but really one of my favorite things to say is if it's up to me, it's up to me. You don't get to look at your life when everything works and be like, oh, I did that. And then when everything doesn't work, be like, oh, no, that wasn't me. And it's the same with food. You know, when you're feeling great and you're performing well, you're like, oh yeah, I'm eating good, I'm on this diet, I'm working out, and then all of a sudden when circumstances come up, whether it's work or lack of sleep, you feel like you're no longer powerful and you give in. Your life and your body and your health is not conditional. You don't get to kind of waver. When you make a commitment, that commitment is unwavering. And I find the best way for me to explain what you said is, like, number one, thank you for people that don't want to have the hard conversations. Everything that shows up in your space and in your life is because you put it there. One way or another, it's there because it's intended to be there, and it continues to show up until you break that pattern. So I'm actually going to steal or go find that post of yours and repost it. Because really, everything comes down to, you know, the relationship between our gut and our brain. Mm-hmm. Everything is triggered, and it's triggered on anchors that we have had created, and every single one of them is hackable. You know, if you have a pattern of emotional eating, your emotions aren't going to go away, but you can change what you do when those emotions come up. So that craving, whatever it is, whether you're craving chocolate or wine or, God, I eat coconut milk ice cream and chocolate chips like it's nobody's business, and the difference is I don't look at it as I'm cheating. Like, I'm not in a relationship with food. I'm choosing. You know, like, one of my favorite things, I'm gonna be a smart ass for a second. This is my favorite thing ever. Focus. I have a pencil and a pen. And I always ask people, I'm like, pencil or pen? And they're like, pencil. And I'm like, why? And they give me a story. And then I'm like, okay, pencil or pen? And they're like, pen. And I'm like, why? And they give me another story. And I'm like, great, wrong. And I'm like, pencil. And I'm like, why? And I'm like, because I choose pencil. That's why. There's no story. There's no reason. It's a choice. And I know that's a really, like, cheesy example. But when it comes down to it, when you have that craving, you can choose to give into it, or you can choose to take a different path. And every time you make that choice to do something different, you're creating a positive affirmation and a positive anchor in your brain and your gut-brain relationship to trigger something different in the future. Like, you could get to yourself craving coconut oil if you really wanted to. I mean, like, you could crave your bulletproof coffee, which I drink every day. You could crave chocolate. You could crave butter, because we all know, like, people like you and I and Jimmy Moore eat it by the stick. Or you could do whatever you want.
It's weird. I actually did go through about 2 years of butter cravings. When I first moved to Canada, it was hard. I hadn't figured out how to get grass-fed butter here. And I was literally, I felt like my performance was going away. And in retrospect, I think there was a biological basis for that. And I really was like, okay, I'm unhappy. If I'm eating this industrial, you know, best organic industrial butter I can get from here, like, it wasn't doing for my body what I was used to getting from quality butter. And I was starting to lag from it. And so I really was like, you know, I'll like, lick my plate to get the butter off of it if it's real butter, like anything to get it into my body. But I didn't feel any guilt about that. I'm just like, okay, I'm listening to the signals from my body that are like, what should I be eating? What should I not be eating? Yeah. And over the course of several years, I actually cut my butter consumption a little bit. And it's not that I did that for any health reason or anything like that. I think it's because I ended up replacing a lot of my cell membranes. So my body was like, I don't need as many raw materials for building. I just need fuel. So I went from, sometimes I do like 6 or 8 tablespoons of butter in my Bulletproof coffee. I'm like, oh, it's like drinking a milkshake that's warm, down to my normal about 2. And I'm a pretty big guy, 2 tablespoons, plus a couple tablespoons of brain octane. And so, like, over time, my cravings diminished, I think, as my biological capacity got greater. Mm-hmm. And that's where, in the Bulletproof Diet book, I've written a lot about sort of willpower, and that if you eat in such a way that you don't get cravings, you'll trigger less of your emotional stuff if you still have the emotional stuff, but you'll also trigger less of the biological stuff. And for me, I found that the vast majority, at least in the last 10 years or so, of food cravings, what a lot of people just identify as hunger, are actually profound cravings. Like, I ate MSG, and like, I had a super strong sugar craving. I'm like, yeah, that's because MSG does that to you, but it was like you had a drug and a response to the drug.
Yeah.
So when you have bulimia running as part of your, you know, your background process, if you ate MSG and you experienced a sugar craving, along with the sugar craving, what else would come with that?
That would come with the binge eating, and then the binge eating would feed into the vicious cycle of being overstuffed, guilty about what I ate, not accepting of my body image, which would then turn into the purging. That was my cycle.
That's how you mix biology and emotion all together at one. And if you think that's all you and you're unaware that you ate that salad dressing that had MSG in it, that was the initial trigger that brought this whole spiral. Wow. Well, it's still your fault. You ate the salad dressing.
Yeah. I mean, what I love too is, and I can't wait to see it in the mindset stuff that you talk about and willpower. One of my favorite things to tell people, and this bridges the biological, psychological gap as well, is that food can literally be a catalyst for amazing results everywhere in your life. Because what I realized is that a lot of my life, 30 years of it, I went through life thinking I had compartments. Like, I was only bulimic in the food place, but I wasn't insecure in my relationships or at work, which was complete BS. And, you know, I think a very powerful thing to realize is that how you show up in one aspect of your life is how you show up everywhere. It's like a blank canvas. You can't be like, oh, I'm fully committed to work, but I'm only toe in my relationship, or I'm fully committed to food, but only half into work. And so that willpower that you talk about, I think it's perfect for people, because I love what you do biohacking wise. I mean, you get into mindset and healthy living and all these different things, but when you can use that willpower to create positive results with food, they show up everywhere. Like, you're going to be like, oh, I lost 5 pounds. Well, you might simultaneously get a raise and a better relationship with your wife, or a healthier, more present, connected relationship with your kids or your friends or anything there, because the way you show up one place supports everything, and you're going to continue to build this momentum with your willpower and anchors. So I appreciate that. That's my long-winded thank you for talking about that too.
I hope you don't mind. I'm just sort of throwing out a lot of questions about psychology, because there are a lot of, you know, we can talk with psychologists all day long, but there's a value that comes from like working on people. But when you've sort of have hacked it yourself, you've maybe learned some lessons that are less obvious to people.
Yeah.
There's one more kind of hard question though, George, and lots of people will say paleo is just a form of orthorexia, and a lot of bulimics can switch over, or anorexics, to being orthorexic. And if you're not, or if you're not familiar with the term and you're listening to this, orthorexia is this eating disorder where you have to eat just the right foods and you can't ever eat anything else, or you're a total failure. So, number one, did you become an inadvertent orthorexic along your path? And what's up with paleo and orthorexia?
Yeah, totally. I feel like that's a very natural evolution of overcoming an eating disorder. It doesn't have to be, but in the process of kind of secretly fighting it, a lot of people go that way because you're jumping on the other side of the ship and you're running from a place of insecurity rather than acceptance. So mindset-wise, psychologically, what I experience is a lot of people, because I get emails all the time about eating disorders. My own journey was, I'm like, great, I'm not going to be bulimic anymore. I focused so much on what I wasn't going to be that I created circumstances that were very orthorexic and on the other end of the spectrum. And what I learned that works for me, and I'll get to the paleo orthorexia in a minute, is focusing on what I am or what I'm up to becoming. You know, language is huge. And a lot of people don't realize the power of language, but when you make declarations, you literally set your subconscious intention to create those results in your life. And my favorite examples, I love this one, when girlfriends are together and they're like, okay, we're married, we're not trying, I'm not going to be pregnant. And then sure enough, 4 weeks later, 5 weeks later, the universe doesn't hear not, and they've literally created a subconscious belief in themselves that they wanted to be pregnant. And it happens all the time in food and whatever it is. So I guess my hack for it was coming from a place of acceptance and creation rather than victim insecurity. This is happening to me. I'm in control. So I was no longer, I'm not a bulimic. I was, I'm healthy. I'm complete. I'm whole. I'm perfect. I feel great. I have energy. And if there were days that it was sluggish, I got to look at not what I was doing wrong, but what was missing that I could bring forward to add value to my life. So that was my hack for that. And with paleo and orthorexia, it is so prevalent, and it's the reason there's so many dogmatic beliefs around paleo. And it shows up everywhere. And I mean, I get it all the time. Like, you go read blogs, my website particularly, or Facebook or whatever, and it's like, I post white rice and you would have sworn that I was practicing witchcraft. And people were coming at me with steaks, or then like, I used too much.
Were they grass-fed steaks? I'm just...
Yeah, they were grass fed and grass finished, but they came from a farm too far from my house. So someone found a reason to correct me.
They weren't harvested by one-armed monks. I've had that problem too. Yeah,
I know. I mean, and I didn't do it myself, and all these other things. But what I like to ask people is, I get those questions all the time, and I actually respond. I take the time to write emails back, and I don't talk about their question. I ask them what I heard them say that they didn't say. Like, what belief do you have about yourself that you projecting your insecurities out on my blog or my website is going to help you overcome the challenge you're having? And what I find is that a lot of people that find paleo, it's because it's the next bandwagon, it's the next big movement, and it's really catchy right now. So they dive in all the way, still insecure, just like they were insecure when they were vegan or when they were vegetarian or when they were carb cycling, never getting to the root system or belief as to why they want to look or be different. And I know for a fact, because it ran my life, on how unhealthy it is, and no matter what you eat or which way you go, you're going to end up with the same results. And we could get into, I mean, you've talked about this before, sympathetic, parasympathetic. When you're operating out of a fight or flight mode, which is anything that is stressing your life, you could eat Oreos. It doesn't matter. Your body's not going to get any nutritional value from it. It's going to process most of it out, and you're going to continue to be unhealthy. You know, you really have to prepare your mind and your body and that connection to receive what you're going to eat. And operating out of a place of orthorexia or insecurity is not going to create the amazing results that you want. And that's why in paleo, there's this huge scale. There's these people that are successful, they're healthy, they're happy, they have energy. And then there's the exact same people that eat the same way, that are unhealthy, still not losing weight, not sleeping, hormonally dysregulated. And it's all about their mindset around the food and how they're relating to it. So that's my short answer. Whew.
Well, it's a great answer, and you said something that's really important there, something that took me a long time to understand. If you're setting an intention or setting a goal, whatever it is, just the word not, it's invisible to your body, it's invisible to your subconscious, it's invisible, you know, to the world around you. So if you say, I want to not be bad, you're like, I want to be bad, is what your stupid body will hear. And it's amazing. Every little nuance of your language matters when you're really trying to tell your body what you want it to do. And so, yeah, never focus on not being fat. I did a double negative.
Yeah, you just said, but it negated itself. So positive.
But the idea of saying I'm going to focus on being healthy or being at an ideal healthy weight, it changes the whole way you see the problem, instead of, you know, running away from something bad, or instead of subtracting something bad, towards adding something good. And it doesn't make a lot of sense logically, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense logically. Unfortunately, your body is completely not rational, at least mine isn't, right? So how did you come up with the name of Civilized Caveman?
Yeah, that's actually, I love that question, because I haven't talked about this one in a while. So my paleo journey started in Afghanistan when I was deployed in 2010. I'd been doing the weight roller coaster and struggling like crazy. And here I am. I'm literally 7,000 miles from where I am right now, in the middle of nowhere, no power, no electricity, no communication. And I was on an outpost, and I had to be up for 48 hours keeping watch over a gun. And I was dying. I'd already snorted some coffee beans. I had poured hot sauce on my tongue every couple minutes. Like, I'd tried it all. And sure enough, I went inside to my tent real quick, and there was someone in there, and of all people, Rob Wolf's book was sitting in the middle of this tent in the middle of Afghanistan. And I'm like, what is this thing? And he's like, oh, paleo is this caveman thing, and you can eat as much as you want, and you can have bacon and steak. And I'm like, sold, great, let me read the book. And I read the book that night, and it really resonated with me. And it resonated for me because I was still bulimic. I was like, this is another control measure for me. This is another easy one. Like, I don't have to weigh anything. I don't have to measure anything. I can just eat what I want. Like, this is a binge eater's dream. So I implemented it out there, kept CrossFitting, came home, dove into paleo, 30 days, like, all meats and vegetables, taught myself how to cook. And I felt amazing. I looked amazing. My allergies were gone. All my symptoms from my traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder were gone, and I was like high on life. I'd never cooked before in my life, before I went paleo, which is funny. Now I'm a New York Times cookbook author. but that's okay. That's a whole different story. And so I started cooking, and I was making other people's recipes, and I posted them on Facebook, and then someone's like, you should start a blog. And I'm like, okay, I don't even know what that is. And I Googled it, and I was sitting there one day, and I was actually trying to be creative. And I thought about how much benefit I got eliminating grains from my diet, because that's how I started, was just eliminating grains.
Yep.
And I was like, the best way to represent what I want to do is I want to blow up grains. Like, I want them off the planet. So one of my friends was an artist, and he drew me a bundle of grains wrapped in C4. And it clicked when I saw that, and I was like, C4, okay. So I wrote out C, 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 and C, and I was like, I got to fill these in. And I was on GoDaddy looking for website names and everything, and then I eventually came up with Civilized Caveman Cooking Creations, also known as C4, in my really cheesy I want a logo days. And it stuck. And then now, you know, my business is Civilized Caveman Incorporated, and my website, Civilized Caveman Cooking. But I love the way that it started, because it started out of such a pure place of like me wanting to destroy the thing that like held me hostage for so long. And that was the just trying to rhyme and be cute was the acronym I got. So that's where Civilized Caveman Cooking came from. And the best part was, is before I met most people, because I met you at PillowFX 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think 3 years ago when we first hooked up.
3 years ago, yeah, because I got coffee from you then. And I remember, because I didn't post pictures of myself online at all. And I had this old caveman looking guy, and I showed up to PillowFX and to speak, and people were like, who are you? And then I'm like, I'm George, the Civilized Caveman. They thought I was supposed to be like 55 or 60, and I was some creepy guy that stayed
like a beard.
With a full beard. And so, I mean, it was fun. And I don't think I'll ever change it, because I just love the story of how it started. But that's where it started from. I was trying to blow up wheat and represent it with my logo.
It's amazing how grains can just mess with your head. And what do you think of this latest round of people saying, oh, it turns out everyone should eat gluten as long as you don't have celiac disease? Like, what's your take on that?
My take on that is luckily someone else runs my Facebook page, or I'd get banned for my vulgar language. But that's bleeping stupid. I just gave a talk. My friend Season runs an organization for kids with leukemia. Her child is 3 and got diagnosed with leukemia 11 months ago, and she's a naturopath and just treated him all with bone broth, liver, and from the day that he was diagnosed to her protocol, he has not had one cancer cell in his body. So I gave a talk to 22 families the other day on cooking healthy on a budget and incorporating paleo and the benefits of it. And a lot of these kids don't have celiac disease, and a lot of these kids don't have any issues with gluten intolerance. But every single one of these kids that eats gluten versus every single one of the kids that doesn't, one's in remission and one still has cancer. And to stand in a room full of 45 people who have 22 children under the age of 6, all with cancer, and single-handedly see the difference that removing gluten from their diet does to their health and lets them live, because I personally have a belief that kids don't get to have cancer. That doesn't exist in my world, and I won't ever stand for it. And I've experienced it with my dad. Like you mentioned at the beginning, it was 2008, and I lost my dad to metastatic brain and lung cancer. And I literally single-handedly for 8 months watched the food that he ate deteriorate his body at such a rate I couldn't even keep up with it. I would be in his hospital room, and I remember specifically, I was in his hospital room on a Thursday night, and I had spent 18 hours at the hospital. I'm like, Dad, I got to go home and shower. I'll be back in the morning. I came back at 6 a.m., and my dad went from fully functional to paralyzed from the neck down, all because of the swelling and the inflammation on his brain from the foods that he was eating, because he had one of his friends sneak him in a steak and cheese calzone. That calzone brought my father from walking to paralyzed. And you can't tell me any differently, because I watched what happened when the food wasn't around and I was in charge of feeding him. And I wasn't even paleo at the time. I was just trying to be healthy. Like, he would eat salads with meat. Like, I didn't even know I was doing it. And I went through the radiation. I went through the chemo. He lost his left leg from lack of blood flow and circulation because of his body and his arteries and the way he was eating. And I literally just watched it deteriorate, my best friend and my father. And that's kind of when I woke up. Like, that's when, you know, when your best friend deteriorates in front of you and you see cause and effect, because you mentioned this earlier, but every single thing we do in this world has a reaction. There's no just blank events. Like, you don't get to do something and it just goes away if it's not good. And It may take years, months, or days to see the reaction, but it always exists. So to answer your question, I don't think anybody should eat gluten. I think it's stupid. I don't think you need it because I've baked everything without it. I've managed to get things to stay shelf stable without it. Bread still rises. So I can't think of a good need for it whatsoever except to poison control people. And that's a whole different conspiracy theory thing. But it's just like, I don't know. Like it literally keeps pharmaceutical companies in business. It keeps diet products in business. And God forbid that people in this world actually cut it out and were healthy and we didn't need all that crap and the good that we could do and the food that we could have and the sustainable food systems that we could create and our kids could go to school and eat lunch without coming home bouncing off the wall or unhealthy or, you know, scared of what can pop up if you do have an allergy. I mean, it's insane. That's my spiel on that one. Outlaw it all.
So gluten the next tobacco, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, CVS. Now CVS can cut gluten out of their stores too, since they cut all tobacco out.
Yeah. And right after that, we can do hydrogenated vegetable oils.
That's a good one too.
We can always dream. Well, let's talk about bacon. How much of it can you eat in 60 seconds, by the way?
10 pieces. 10 pieces would be my record. It's on YouTube and it burnt the roof of my mouth because the amount of salt that was pushed up against the roof of my mouth.
Obviously, you haven't made a bacon smoothie.
No, I haven't made a bacon smoothie. That would have been a really quick hack. See, that's why you're the biohacker, because you think about stuff like that.
I can say I've never made one either. I had a raw lamb liver smoothie once. Don't do that again. That was horrible.
I had a liver smoothie at Primal Pastures the other day. They made a chicken liver smoothie with like strawberries, and they didn't tell me what it was. And I drank it, and it was yummy. And I was like, good job. You win. You know, great. I'll drink my offals. But yeah, that video was funny. What I should have titled is how many pieces of bacon can you fit in your mouth in 60 seconds, because there was no way I was chewing it all. Yeah, bacon's a good one for me because I eat a lot of it and I'm kind of known for it. My hashtag is hugs and bacon and people love it. And I'll say quality matters. Quality matters immensely. I make a lot of my bacon.
Me too.
And I have local farmers that make amazing bacon and I'm friends with them and I support them. I'm not going to Costco and eating 5 pounds of their bacon in a week. It's just not there. So
I'm glad you brought that up. It's one of those things where, let's just face it, everyone likes bacon. Even vegans like bacon.
Yeah.
You know, deep down inside, they're repulsed and also attracted. And it's okay. It's natural. But
totally.
Just like cucumbers are a gateway vegetable. You might have a salad if you start with a cucumber. It goes both ways.
Bacon's the gateway drug to paleo.
Exactly. The problem is like a lot of bacon isn't very good. If you eat, 5 pounds of poorly fed pork, what's going to happen to you?
Well, real quick too, just to touch on that, I want to just say most of the bacon you find in the store isn't technically bacon because they've figured out a way and they've hacked the process so many times that just to define bacon, it's cured and then smoked pork belly. When you inject something with a quick cure from the inside out and inject it with liquid smoke, that does not equal cured and smoked. That is not traditional bacon. I just want to clear that up. So if you eat 5 pounds of commercially processed CAFO bacon, you're probably going to end up on your toilet with inflammation, disease, sick, allergies, not sleeping, shakes, trembles, lack of energy, and crashes pretty much throughout the day, and you'll never know what it is and you'll think it's normal because that's the kind of food that you're used to eating. When you eat 5 pounds of homemade bacon or pastured bacon, you'll feel energetic, you'll have all the good fats, you'll feel less tired, you'll feel less foggy, all the membranes, same stuff that your amazing bulletproof coffee does. But I had a question, and I'm going to relate this to bacon. During that presentation that I gave to those families with cancer, we were talking about how horrible peanuts are for you and the mold and the toxicity and peanut butter is made from trash because all the good peanuts are the ones that go into the bin for people to look at.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And they have some of the highest concentrations of toxicity out of anything.
Aflatoxin City.
And aflatoxin, and it's insane. And a woman said to me, she said, okay, so if I'm in a pinch, I can use this peanut butter because it's organic. And I said, okay. And I looked at her and said, how much is your child's life worth? And the whole room went silent. And I said, are you telling me right now that in a pinch, your only option is to find a peanut butter that's going to kill your child? There's no better option for you. And she didn't like my question. And at the end of it, though, it landed because that's what people don't understand. You mentioned it earlier, but your food, I like to relate my body to my car.
Yes.
And if I put water in my gas tank, I'm not going anywhere. If I don't change the oil, I'm not going anywhere. If I don't wash it, no one's going to see me. If I don't take care of it, it's going to rot away and rust. Like, your car is the best representation of your body. And if you don't put high-quality gas in it, it's going to shut down every day. And it's not a bad thing because it also tells you every day when it's running like poop. And all you have to do is change the gas. And putting crappy meat and processed bacon and processed everything else in there and buying almond milk, which I have a fact for you. You'll like this one. I'm sorry. A container of almond milk that you pay like $3.99 for has the equivalent of 6 almonds in it. If I was to go buy 6 almonds at the store, it would cost me like, I don't know, 17 cents. So their markup's like 2,000% to give you water with 6 almonds in it when you can make it at home in 24 hours.
You're totally wrong there. I told you we disagree. Because you're not getting just 6 almonds. You got carrageenan and high fructose corn syrup. Come on, those have economic value, man.
I forgot how expensive those were to produce and poison us all. I actually like admitting being wrong, especially on that point. So, I mean, it's just when we look at life, I'm just going to keep running this one, Dave. I'm going. But when we look at life and we look at this, because this bacon question segue me into everything, I want to talk about priorities.
Yeah.
Like, what is your life worth? And I'm going to tell you right now that this thing is poison. Facebook is poison. Instagram is poison. Because when you focus and spend all your time on that and then tell me you don't have time to make your own almond milk or eat healthy, you're telling me that your iPhone is more important than your life. And I refuse to believe that.
Plus, and, you know, they have the Blendtec blenders that can actually make a smoothie out of an iPhone in a pinch.
Yeah,
so you
totally
can bring it all together.
And I have one, and we actually tried it like 2 years ago, and it works really well. But it's just it's one of those things. It's like, what did we do 20 years ago before we had the Zach Morris cell phone? We had conversations with people. We cooked home-cooked meals. We actually had time when we got home from work when we weren't yelling at traffic or working in our car or tied to our phone to actually go through the process of preparing our bodies for a meal. Decompressing, getting into that rest and digest mode, making a meal, making food that's fresh and not frozen and not prepared for us. Everybody's always had the same amount of time, and what I love is that time is a measure that we created, and if you feel that you don't have enough of it, you're relating it to it in the wrong manner because there's plenty of it, and it's not really going to matter if you die. So what's important?
There's also relative strength of poison. Like I would actually put peanuts as something that really there's so many reasons not to eat them. Pay attention. But some foods are less toxic, but not perfect. Like, what do you think of that idea of relative harm reduction?
Yeah, no, I'm totally on board with that. I'm not like I don't want everybody homesteading. Like I get it. Like we don't need to be homesteading and slaughtering chickens in our kitchen while growing our own almonds, husking, shelling, and making almond butter. I believe that we as man and as society and as a culture have created things that most definitely increase our quality of life, and I'm all for them. And it's just about doing it in an educated manner. But peanut butter gets to go, and processed meats get to go, and buying, packaged processed food gets to go because there's plenty of other options, and it's just harm reduction is amazing, and it's also just prioritizing. We have the ability and the time. And of course, we have people that work 80 hours a week and have 2 to 3 kids, and I get it. And there's still options, and there's still ways, and it's all of us just finding the way to make it work and win for everybody. So I'm totally on board for that. Like, I do it. Like, I go buy my coffee sometimes instead of making it, and then I'll even, have people make things for me. I'll go buy almond milk from a local restaurant that makes it by hand instead of making it myself. Like, I'm all for it. And it's what fits into your parameters in your life. And, it all goes back to mindset. It's how you relate to your life. Like, what are your priorities and what's your mindset around it? Like, you're not a victim to it and you get to choose. So you can choose what you put in and what you put out. And I think that's a great point. So thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome, and thanks for expressing it so eloquently. There's something that happened. I went through this path of learning to cook, and I've been a pretty advanced cook for a while, but there was a time when I had very little knowledge, and I remember I was like, well, I could make a low-carb lasagna, and I'll just like thinly slice the chicken breasts and put in cheese and pepperoni, and I still felt crappy when I ate that for obvious reasons now.
Yeah.
All right. But, you know, so that was many years ago. And I've evolved all these strategies, been a raw vegan and been a raw omnivore and you know, looked at different schools and all that. But there's one thing that is a sure giveaway when you get it right. And you described it from home-cooked bacon. It's something I get too, or, you know, home-cured and cooked bacon. That's not overcooked, by the way. If you fry the crap out of it, it doesn't work. You get a food high. Mm-hmm. Like you're done eating, and it's not like a buzz, like I had Adderall, or even I had too much coffee. It's just like a burst of just like really visceral energy. Mm-hmm. And you know when you eat a meal like that, but most people don't eat a meal like that even once a year. But when you make that your goal for a meal, just like, oh my God, I feel amazing at the end of this meal. You certainly understand that, and food quality and food composition are major things. But how do you teach that? Like you talked about these parents with kids who have cancer. How do you show them that?
Yeah, I find I like to take – this is literally one of those, like if you've ever seen that movie with What About Bob? Like literally baby steps, like one step at a time. And I don't say that because people can't handle a lot. I say that because the only moment you have is the present. So my job in the present is to create a moment in that present for you that is so positive that in your next moment you choose the same thing. And for me with cooking, because just like similar to you, I kind of had to develop everything myself. I didn't know how to cook. Like that was the scariest thing for me. And I'm like, okay. And then I don't even remember who it was. Someone's like, what's the worst that could happen? And I'm like, well, it won't taste good. They're like, great. Are you going to live? And I'm like, well, yeah. And they're like, great. Don't mess up again. You know, and like, when you relate to it like that, like I was able to kind of dive in. So what I found for people, especially people with children, a couple points here. My daughter is 9, my girlfriend's daughter. We call me bonus dad, but she's my daughter too. And, you know, kids at that age don't understand, or kids really at any age don't understand a lot of the things that we understand on a scientific level or on a biological level or even psychological level when it comes to food and the relationship to it. And we are literally training mini human beings to be just like we are. And how you relate to things and the energy that you put into things and how you operate is how they are. And you mentioned this earlier, that high from the food. What I was going to say is that it's frustrating to think that we have such a strong marketing background in this country that we have convinced people that Pepto-Bismol and antacids are a normal thing after you go out for Mexican food, instead of saying, no, that's telling you that you shouldn't eat that because you're causing leaky gut and microscopic holes in your small intestine. And it's a very big difference. So teaching and inspiring your kids, but also being able to draw a hard line, like no one's going to take a stand for your kid's health like you are. And I'm sorry if Cheyenne gets mad at me or someone gets mad at me because I told my kid that they can't have some processed gummy bears and they have to have vegetables or homemade potato chips or homemade even corn tortilla chips. And I'm going to stand in that all day and you can hate me all day. But no one else is going to do it for you. So for that case, there's two ways it goes. And if you go into it energetically, it's really easy. You just use your brain and how your brain works using NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. Dave can do a whole other podcast on that one. Just to trigger and create anchors around things and reward them with positivity. You know, everything that we do in our life is around a pattern. Every single thing, it was a learned pattern. Like your paradigm was formed between 4 and 8 sometime. And your belief system and the filters to which you see the world were formed. Those filters never go away. Your paradigm's here, but it's possible to blow that box out and just make it wider and wider and wider and know that your filters exist. So you're creating your kids' filter. So associate them eating healthy or vegetables, or when they come home, they're like, hey, I had pizza at lunch because I didn't want to eat the lunch, but now I don't feel good and I'm tired. Be honest with them. Tell them why they feel that way. Educate them. You know, treat them like mini adults and how you want them to operate in the world. And then feed them something else that leaves them feeling energized or happy or excited about and be like, this is how you feel when you eat this because this is what it does to your body. And in moments that you can do that, you're literally creating anchors around eating healthy and feeling good and then eating like crap and feeling sluggish and exhausted, and you're educating. It's not like a dictatorship. It's a team. It's like a good balance in your teaching and training, which, you know, it's that whole teach a man to fish or give him a fish thing. Like, everything that you can teach empowers people to make those decisions. So your turn. I'm done.
It's kind of funny. I've taught my kids, and when we cook, one of the reasons that food cooked at home tastes better is because there's love in it. So when they cook, they like put their hands over the food and like, look, Daddy, I'm putting love in it. I'm like, you keep doing that. And I've also had them come up and say something, you know, I ate at school or whatever. And they know not to eat gluten, and you know, they're pretty conscious, and they're 5 and 7. But my daughters said, "Daddy, can I have some charcoal? Because you know, we know that like when you eat stuff that makes your stomach hurt, you could take charcoal that'll bind that. You know, it's an old Ayurvedic thing. And I mean, I make charcoal, so it's not like we don't have it in the house. And they, she'll say, "Can I have one? Because I can tell my tummy doesn't feel good," and she'll take it, and she feels better. And she has also associated that as what she ate. So just for me, I never had any belief as a young man that what I put in my body as food had anything to do with my emotional regulation or the amount of willpower or the amount of energy or anything other than it probably made me fat. And I ate the food because I was weak anyway, you know, because you know, I obviously should have eaten less or I wouldn't be fat and all
totally.
All that BS that people, I guess some people still believe, but it's not part of my world anymore.
Yeah, I actually love what you said too, and it's something I talk about when sometimes I don't talk about mindset, I just talk about food. But one of the things that I tell people, and the original question, when you said you teach your kids that the difference in taste is love in the food, I wholeheartedly believe that 100% energetically, because how you show up and how you relate to food dictates how that food tastes. Because if you go into the kitchen, oh my God, I got to cook dinner, I don't have enough time, your meal is going to taste rushed. No one's going to enjoy it, because what you're putting into it is what you're going to get out of it. So I love that you teach your kids that, because I tell people the secret to a delicious meal is enjoying what you do and sharing your love, and that like you're giving the gift of life to someone. Because truth be told, if we don't eat, we die. And you are literally single-handedly giving someone nourishment that keeps them alive. That is a big, big deal that I think is overlooked a lot. And we kind of lost that touch in society of the whole thought of breaking bacon, because we don't break bread, we break bacon, and having that community and that aspect and that bonding and that connection. Like, that's where our health comes from. Like, what really matters besides that? So I tell people to look at food and look at cooking and recipes or whatever you're doing, whether you've cooked for 20 years, you're learning how, look at it at that level and how important it is for you to function every day and other people to function. And you'll be able to take it in a manner that's empowering rather than, oh, I got to do dishes, oh, I got to chop this vegetable, oh, I got to cook this recipe. It's like, no, oh, I get to give life to someone. Oh, I get to make my kids feel good, happy, and sleep better. Oh, I get to support my own health, and I get to prevent cancer and diabetes and every other autoimmune condition or inflammatory disease out there. So I love it in the short manner. Love what you do. Like, put your love into it and put your heart into it. Like, that's your gift to people. And it's the best way to unconditionally give, because you can do it 3 times a day.
Yeah, eating and preparing food is a powerful thing. In fact, there's one Buddhist teaching, which is to minimize the number of people who touch your food before you eat it. And of course, there's, you know, hard to quantify energetic stuff there that lots of people I know and respect, including you, we'll talk about openly. And I can't say I've ever, I just had the steak and the steak was made with anger and therefore it tasted bad. maybe I just don't have that, you know, that kind of antenna. But I certainly find that when food is made by people who are paying attention to the act of preparing the food and with consciousness, it seems to taste better, seems to make you feel better. And I'm willing to go with what I experience, and maybe it's all in my head, but hey, there's lots of good stuff in my head. I'm down with that.
I tell people to experience your experience. Like, it's not outside of you. You're experiencing it for a reason. I find far too many people kind of sidestep or push their experiences away, especially when they come to like pain or anger or anguish. But tying back in the beginning, and we can go to food in a second, but this was something that I always tell people. The only way to the other side is through it. Mm-hmm. And that's in a good and a bad way. And it doesn't have to be good or bad, because technically, like, whole quantum physics world, every event in this world is neutral. The interpretation you put on it puts a charge on it, whether negative or positive, it's on how you relate to it. But you get to experience your experience, and that's how you live life. And you know, when it comes to food, if you have a bad experience, experience it. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's okay. You'll learn a lot of lessons. And if you have a good one, experience it and celebrate it, because you're going to get more of it. And that's the stuff that you attract. So we don't need to talk about molecular and biochemistry and quantum physics and all that stuff. But I think you can taste an angry steak, personally.
So I believe there are people who can, and perhaps I'm just not that enlightened. I will say, though, that I can tell the difference between an unhealthy animal steak and a healthy animal steak. And honestly, and this will sound a bit hippie, but there's biochemical rationale for it. An animal that died in a state of fear and panic is not a flavorful animal. Like, you don't feel good when you eat the stress hormones from an animal that watched 10 other of its type get killed in front of it. So the process of slaughter is actually really important, and it's often not talked about even in paleo circles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what the cow ate is all good, but if you basically bitch slap the cow and shock it with a cattle prod a few times and then, you know, beat it to death and eat it, it's a horribly violent thing. And the hormones from that treatment, the cortisol, the adrenaline, it is in the meat and it's not coming out. And that's why, you know, the whole process of how it's raised, how it's treated, how it's slaughtered, how it's butchered, how it's cooled, how it's prepared, how it's packaged, how it gets to you, how you cook it, and how you eat it, all of those go into how you feel when you're done. And it's a system, it's a process, and it matters, and that's why I don't eat industrial meat, because they get every step of that wrong.
And that's why it's so important to know and support your farmer, because a lot of people don't understand every aspect that goes into it. And I mean, it's insane. Like, people, all I hear about people is the price of it. And I'm like, if you had any inclination on what they put in and how much money they're not making off you to provide you the highest quality possible, you would support them all day, you know? And it's an amazing thing. I mean, it just, and even, and I've experienced this. There's some ranches I know, and in some way you can't get around this with the USDA and how location where slaughterhouses are, but like, putting cows on a trailer and shipping them 600 miles away to be slaughtered, that's just stress. And it's not like they get there and get out in the grass. Like, you're literally ripping them away from their home and putting them in a bumpy metal trailer and then bring them to a slaughter facility where as soon as they come off, they get slaughtered. It makes a huge difference. So it really pays to be educated. And God, from the bottom of the process down, you don't have to do it yourself, but understanding is really powerful. I really appreciate you bringing up those points, because people, especially in paleo, like, I think everybody – my experience of paleo is everybody wants to talk about rainbows and unicorns and not the messy stuff. And I'll tell you that the value in life is in the messy stuff, because that's how you get through it. You learn lessons and you provide value, is when you're willing to get messy and get down in the level that you need to create different results.
We agree there. And it's possible to be so picky you're paralyzed. And we're not talking about that. I don't, you know, shake the hand of everyone who ever fed the cows that I eat, but I do generally know the name of the guys who grew the cows that I eat at home. And when I go out to eat, I tend to eat fish because they're dumb. They're like swimming vegetables pretty much. And that's okay, right?
Oh, that's wow. I like that.
I just said that swimming to be inflammatory. Vegetables. I apologize if you're a fish, whatever. But in all seriousness, fish seem to have less of a problem there than cows do. So I'm really picky about my four-legged animals that I eat. We'll put it that way.
Totally. Yeah. And there's never going to be a perfect. It's a pick your stance. But just the more educated you are, the better you are. And it doesn't just benefit you. It benefits everybody, because you're supporting a cause that you can stand behind, and then you can give quality recommendations and get the movement going. And, you know, like I said earlier, if it's up to me, it's up to me. Like, every single one of us is single-handedly responsible for reforming the food and the diet and the lifestyle and the healthy and the pharmaceutical and everything else in this country that we need to get reformed to be healthy. It's all up to us. So yeah, I appreciate that. So
I know that you must have some stuff on your site where you recommend particular ranchers. I know bulletproofexec.com/beef. I've listed some of my favorite ones, because, you know, it's hard to know. You just go online and, like, I don't know, order some grass-fed meat. And until you've, you know, had those relationships, I've interviewed some of the farmers on the show. And it's fascinating what they know, because these are beef hackers. And they've spent their whole life paying attention to, like, what makes the optimal cow. And honestly, I don't know that, but I know the people who know. And, like, they can optimize my cows, upgrade my beef, and, like, it's all good.
That's the powerful thing, is knowing the person who does know. Because I've heard some farmers, and one of my best friends is a pig farmer. I get all my pork there. And she started a pig farm because her kid had food allergies and she was sick of questioning the meat. So she started raising pigs 3 years ago. And now they have over 500 pigs on 20 acres. And they supply every restaurant in San Diego and LA with the best pork ever. And It's like listening to them talk, my jaw like hits the floor. Like breeding times, the amount of feed that they get, when you feed them acorns versus macadamia nuts versus avocados, the flavor profile and the balance of each. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, you're the boss. I support you.
Let's think about this. Wine, pork. If you're going to like dedicate yourself to making something perfect, there's something sexy about being the one who makes the perfect pork. I mean, there's lots of good wine out there, but like, I don't know, like the best pork belly ever is a religious experience.
It's like vintage bacon or late harvest bacon. I mean, different flavors. It's amazing. I literally like I experience it from my pig farmer. Her name's Christina. It's Cook Pigs in Julian, but during the winter, they're at 4,000 feet. So when the acorns start falling off the trees, she'll supplement with macadamia nuts on top of the acorn to change the flavor of the meat and the fat. And I can take a pork chop from June and a pork chop from December and taste test them, and you can distinctly taste the difference between the avocados and barley mash and the acorns and macadamia nuts. And it's literally like pork hacking. It's insane.
Well, we could probably do a whole show on how to hack your pork, but we're coming up on the end of this one, and that means that there's one question that you've probably heard listening to the podcast before. Your top three recommendations for people who want to kick more ass, people who just want to perform better, not at sports, but just in life.
Yeah, I love that. Number one, celebrate yourself is the best way to say that. Celebrate every victory and celebrate every non-victory, because there really are no failures or losses in life. It's how you relate to them, and you can learn from everything. Celebrate everything. Number two, start now, like right now. Now, I don't care what it is. If you want to drink more water every day, have a sip right now. If you want to walk more every day, walk around your desk right now. Analysis paralysis will hold you hostage, and you get different results by taking action. So right now, take an action on whatever your goal is. Number three, and I love this because we talked about language, make a commitment statement for yourself every day. And it doesn't have to be written down. But when you wake up in the morning, say, today I'm committed to eating 3 healthy meals. Today I'm committed to drinking 8 cups of water or 3 cups of bulletproof coffee or whatever makes you happy. Make the commitment and then celebrate your win. Because every time that you acknowledge yourself for keeping your word and keeping your commitment and integrity, you create confidence and you create a further depth of commitment, which shows up everywhere in your life. And if something doesn't work, great. Look at what was missing, add it, and recommit. Like I recommit 25 times a day to whatever it is. And my list never gets finished, but I manage to put the energy and the power and the passion behind it full force all the time and celebrate the wins, which keeps this happy, which keeps your gut and your body happy and all that stuff. So those are my three.
That's an awesome list. Where can people learn more about you? So you already mentioned URL. Mention it again. Mention the name of your book and any other places you want people to find you.
Totally. The easiest place to find me, my name's George Bryant. My website is civilizedcavemancooking.com. And from there, I link out everywhere. And my book, which we hit 20 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list and number 4, which I'm excited about, is called The Paleo Kitchen. You can find that on my website or thepaleokitchen.com. And then, I don't know, Google me. Look forward to the new podcast that's coming out in the next couple weeks. It's called Unperfectly Paleo. Can't wait to dive in and get messy on that one. So I'm excited.
George, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too.
Hey, do you know about the new coffee kits on the all-new upgradedself.com? We actually pair bags of coffee with brain octane oil or upgraded MCT oil so you can get a discount, actually a really substantial discount, on getting your coffee and your oil delivered to you. We also have an all-new subscription service that works seamlessly, so you can get the bulletproof coffee that you rely on to keep your brain turned on. You can just get it delivered to your house whenever you want to have it. So what you get is an ultra-clean bean that makes you feel good all the time when you drink it, and it doesn't cause food cravings the way normal coffee does.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products.
Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.